He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
We have a total of 9 victims that were involved in this very tragic situation that occurred last night. Of the victims, there are 3 males and 6 female victims in this tragedy. This is a very dangerous and extremely dangerous individual, and we need the public's assistance to identify him as quickly as possible.
He's a racist James Holmes. That's what he is. Like the Aurora monster, but motivated by racial animus. What kind of sick monster can be welcome to a church prayer meeting, sit in a pew to worship for an hour before unleashing terrible violence? This brutal massacre we woke up to this morning, 9 defenseless parishioners, 3 black men, 6 black women killed. What hatred could motivate so incomprehensible an infamy? What obscene motive could there be to commit this awful act of terror, shedding innocent blood before the altar of a loving, compassionate God? The young white man who apparently committed this terrible crime in Charleston, South Carolina last night, even as he uttered racist epithets, has deeply wounded our already fractured nation. A racist James Holmes, a disgruntled psychopath, in this case apparently driven by racial animus. This is an attack on every American of goodwill. From Charleston, South Carolina, Charles James joins us. Charles is the host of the WTMA morning show, big show down there. Charles, first of all, how did you hear about it? And then tell me what the reaction of the town is.
Geraldo, thanks. We originally heard reports last night. I was checking my Twitter feed last night, and I saw a shooting downtown Charleston. All right, that's one of those things where you go, okay, that's something I need to pay attention to. Little did we know that not 10, 15 minutes later, we would start getting reports in that, no, 8 or 9 people were shot. Then it was 8 or 9 people are dead, and more information kept coming in all through the night. It's been a very long morning as we have been getting all of this information coming in. And more recently, the FBI has just confirmed that the shooter is 21-year-old Dylan Roof of the Columbia, South Carolina area. Also have reports that...
How do you spell Roof? R-O-O-F?
R-O-O-F, exactly like the roof on a house. The first name is spelled D-Y-L-A-N-N. Dylan Roof, we've got a picture of him online right now.
And so that's the WTMA website right now.
That would be the WTMA website, yes, sir, in Charleston, South Carolina. So this guy, no other information. We don't know if he's in custody. We do know that he is known by the FBI. Of course, like I said, he is out on recent drug charges. Police are still looking for him. As far as we know, they haven't released any other information about whether or not he is in custody. Of course, the man suspected in shooting those 9 people last night, one of them, State Senator Clementa Pinckney, who has passed away. And we're seeing just these heartbreaking pictures from the State House with Senator Pinckney's desk draped in a black cloth this morning. So everyone in Charleston is completely in shock.
Charles James is with us. He's the host of the WTMA morning show, Cumulus Radio, there in Charleston, South Carolina, the scene of an unspeakable massacre of 9 black parishioners. The perpetrator, now identified as Dylan Roof, reports Charles. And Charles, do you have an age on this man?
Looks like 21 years old. He is originally from the Columbia, South Carolina area, which is about an hour and a half north of here.
And you say he was known to the FBI. Can you give us a little bit about what his previous run-ins with the authorities were?
The only thing we have right now, Geraldo, is that he was out of jail on drug charges.
And so where this racist motivation came from, any clue there, Charles James?
No idea. We do know that Police Chief Greg Mullins was very quick this morning to call this a hate crime, and that was raising a lot of eyebrows here in Charleston, and of course across the social network. There was a, why are they so quick to call this a hate crime? But now we're hearing some of the horrible things that are reportedly were reportedly said by this guy as he opened fire on those parishioners. And Geraldo, this is one of those things that this community especially doesn't need. Just coming off the Walter Scott shooting a few weeks ago and just starting to heal from that. So more racial strife in the Charleston area is certainly not anything we need.
All right, that is absolutely for sure. Charles James is our guest. We're delighted to have the host of the WTMA morning show on board. You remember Walter Scott. Everybody in the four corners of this country, around the world indeed, remembers that vivid, horrifying video of Walter Scott being shot in the back by the white officer who is still in prison. And just as Charleston, South Carolina, a city with a very rich and in many ways troubling racial history, begins to heal from the Walter Scott killing, comes this and I know, Charles, you don't want to say what he said, but can you give us a flavor, first of all, of who it is that is recounting the utterances of this racist psychopath and what, generally speaking, he was said?
Those sources, very racial. You know, you come here, you rape our people, you rape our women, you're trying to take over, you need to go home. Now, these are unconfirmed sayings, but they are being reported from some news outlets that aren't local. But when our police chief, Greg Mullins, who is a very well-respected man in this community, a very soft-spoken man and a man of few words, but when he comes out and says something like, this is a hate crime, you can only believe him.
Charles James, if you would hold on, I want to give Marty a number where we can reach you as this story develops. I fear that we are at the beginning of something, not at the end of something. Charles, I appreciate your reporting. WTMA, go to their website right now, ladies and gentlemen, in Charleston, South Carolina, to get the very latest. But Charles, with his reporting, 21-year-old Dylan Roof, is the apparent suspect in this horrible hate crime. Charles mentioned Greg Mullen, the very well-regarded police chief there in Charleston. Did you know him, Layden, work with him?
I did not. No, he must be after. But I'm actually on Dylan Roof's Facebook page trying to see if I can garner anything from what he has posted there. And what I find interesting right away, of his generation, and he looks like he's in his young 20s, 21.
21, they say.
They're saying positively 21. Normally you have 8,000 friends, you know what I mean, on a Facebook page. 89 friends, sort of interesting, from the upstate, went to Knoll High School in the upstate. And there's only one picture of him, and it's definitely the same person with that sort of bowl haircut you don't see too often anymore, in a black jacket with a bunch of flags on it. Maybe you'll be able to identify the flags when we go to the break. I'll show them to you. But not much else on his page. So I'm just looking through it as I talk to you.
Now, as a reporter who worked Charleston, South Carolina, you want to know, Layden, give us, what do you think now in this town, this fractured town, what's the impact of this massacre?
It's hard to know. I mean, look what happened with North Charleston with Walter Scott's murder, and the mayor there, Mayor Sumney, was able to keep it together.
That's why everybody's got to be together on this one, folks. There's no controversy here. This is everybody. This is an attack on every person of goodwill. Every one of us. The young white man who committed this terrible crime, as he's uttering these racist epithets, he has deeply wounded our fractured nation, a racist James Holmes, a disgruntled psycho. I take Dave in Irvington, New Jersey, our first call at 866 Geraldo. Dave, what are you thinking about, buddy?
Yes, Geraldo, good morning. I couldn't agree with you more. You know, and the interesting thing about racists and bigots, be they black or white, you know, this whole idea that a white racist loves white people, that's a sham. You know, individuals like that would just as soon kill their own white family members. You know, whether you're a militant Black Panther or a white racist nut like this guy, they don't love anybody. At the end of the day, they don't even love themselves. But you're absolutely correct. This is a time when people of goodwill, we need a new polarization in this country. And that's people of goodwill of all colors and backgrounds polarizing ourselves against the bad people.
I'm with you, Dave. Thanks for the call. 866 Geraldo will continue to give you the very latest from the scene of this a massacre that I believe will go down in infamy alongside the Birmingham, Alabama church bombing of 1963, where those four black children were killed by racist terrorists. This is a racist terrorist. He has killed nine parishioners, people who welcomed him into their church. And he killed them. He shed their blood before the altar of the loving and compassionate God. It is 60 minutes after 10 o'clock.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866 Geraldo, 77 WABC.
You look at 21-year-old Dylan Roof's mugshot, and he has that blank, almost expressionless face under this weird 1960s bowl haircut. And as he stares out at you, you see the blandness of hatred that is almost incomprehensible. Nick Valencia, CNN, is covering this latest incident, this unprecedented massacre that I think will be remembered in infamy. So, Nick, what's the latest?
Unfathomable tragedy, Geraldo. A very active situation right now at the scene. Manhunt is underway. A search for the alleged shooter that left nine people dead. According to police, the gunman arrived at the historic Emmanuel Church, historic Emmanuel AME Church, sometime after 8 p.m. And according to police, sat with the Bible study group for an hour before he carried out his massacre. There was that Bible study going on, as well as a planning meeting for an upcoming conference to be held at the historic church. Sometime after 9 p.m., police received that first call that there was a mass shooting. Among the dead, we can tell you, we have confirmed that State Senator Clementa Pinckney, who is also a pastor at the church, was shot and killed, including eight others, three men, six women. We're told at the time 13 people, including the shooter, were in that Bible study group. There are three survivors, among them a young girl. Now, I mentioned that active manhunt, Geraldo. The FBI, regional and local authorities are involved in search for this suspect, described as a white male, 5'9", slight build, distinctive license plate on his car. Those details have not been released of exactly what is written on that license plate. They also say he has a distinctive hoodie. No details of that, but let's make no mistake about it. Police say that this is a hate crime. I just got on the phone with the Charleston Police Department press information officer. I asked him point blank, why? What led you to this conclusion that this is a hate crime? He says, like the police chief said at a press conference, these individuals were killed because they were black. This is being investigated as a hate crime, Geraldo.
Now, Nick Valencia of CNN, the fine reporter on the scene. We are delighted that he joins us on this grim, horrifying incident here. Now, do you, what are you reporting about what he said, what Dylan Roof allegedly said as he perpetrated this terrible massacre, Nick?
We wish we can tell your listeners exactly the conversation and the details exchanged between the shooter and the those that were praying at that Bible study. We just don't know what those what that conversation was, what those words exchanged were, but it has led police to investigate this as a hate crime. It's being reported by a local newspaper, Post and Courier, as well as other local affiliates, that racial slurs were uttered. We don't know the extent of that conversation again, but, you know, this is being investigated as a hate crime. Police convinced that these individuals were targeted because they were black.
How much time, Nick Valencia of CNN, how much time passed between the perpetration of the massacre and the police reports? In other words, how big a lead did this Dylan Storm Roof, that's his name, 21-year-old Dylan Storm Roof, have?
Well, we know that the shooting happened at about 9.05 p.m. Eastern time last night. Police were out overnight giving updates about the individual. They're asking for the public's assistance, but they have not said what those distinctive qualities about him are. There have been only some snapshots from surveillance photos. We now are learning that the FBI is naming him. And just as I'm on the phone with you, Geraldo, an update for the City of Charleston Police Department identifying the suspect in the June 17 shooting here as the Dylan Roof of Lexington, South Carolina. This just into us. My producer just handed me the phone. He has a birth date of April 3rd,
1994, and the vehicle he may be driving, according to this post by the city of Charleston, Dylan Roof, driving a black Hyundai with its tag LGF330. Anyone with information about its location is encouraged to call the FBI.
Excellent reporting. Nick Valencia of CNN. I appreciate it, mate.
Thank you.
So, Noam Layden, we have a black Hyundai, he said. Mm-hmm. Black Hyundai, obviously, here in New York, the odds are he won't make it this far. OGS330 is the tag. I assume a South Carolina tag. Date of birth, April 1994. I mean, a 21-year-old. What can happen in the life of a 21-year-old that can make him a mini Hitler? Where he's going to go out and perpetrate a genocide on a congregation in a historic, and to choose that location where Martin Luther King has spoken and Booker T. Washington has spoken, a crossroads in the civil rights movement where abolitionists met, a deeply historic place, a place meaningful, steeped in the history of not only the South, but the nation. And to have this punk go there and to kill six women along with the three men as he says these obscene statements about you're stealing our women. I mean, what kind of bizarre caricatures was he living with in his brain? We'll give you the very latest on the manhunt for the perp, now identified as 21-year-old Dylan Storm Roof. His picture is all over the internet.
WABCradio.com.
I've been around the block a few times, seen a lot of terrible, terrible things. A lot of things that I wish I never saw that are scarred in my psyche. Just things I wish I could, like, scratch them out of my mind and not remember them. This is like that. This is like that. This is like being alive in Birmingham, Alabama in 1963 and looking at that church and thinking about those four little black children blown to shreds, four little black girls blown to shreds by racists. And you know that this Dylan Storm Roof, 21-year-old, Lexington,
South Carolina.
South Carolina, mm-hmm. Not Kentucky. Lexington, South Carolina. From Lexington, South Carolina, I guess that's around the Columbia.
It's upstate,
area.
Yeah.
Dylan Roof, that he, like Charles Manson, almost, his motive was to start a racial conflagration. He's. I'm sure. I mean, we don't know, obviously. And facts will replace surmise. But based on what we know, this is a racist stormtrooper who's trying to start a bigger confrontation. We have to fight against it. We have to suppress the instincts to be angry at each other and be on the same page. People of goodwill against the haters. Is Will in New York calling 866 Geraldo? What's up, Will?
Hey, how you doing, Geraldo? You know something? When blacks tell y'all that this thing is looking like it's building to something, and this guy, you know, you can't let this out that he's crazy or he's a lone guy. This is a coordinated effort, man, to create a big problem, you know, between whites and blacks. And, you know, when y'all get on the page and realize that these people have infiltrated all walks of our lives, and they're there like little cells ready to trigger off. That's what's going on in the police department. There's a small faction of people and across the country. These people, when Barack Obama, black president, became president, if they were to come out in full gear, they would look like enemy combatants. So they're smart enough to go underground, and that's what we are experiencing now.
I hope you're wrong. No, I hope you're wrong. But, you know, you don't even need... You know, Will, you don't even need a coordinated plot. All you need is a viewpoint held by a tiny minority that arms itself in the same way ISIS. This is more like ISIS. This is a racist ISIS, it seems to me.
Is it a small minority? That's the first terrorist organization, homegrown, these people, these clans and all these people. You know, and they've been allowed to operate since the inception of this country, man.
All right, let's have our anger shrouded in love. We got to be on the same page. We're all.
Don't let them spin it.
Don't let them spin it. I hear that, brother. Thank you for the call, Fred in Brooklyn. What are you thinking about, Fred?
Yeah, first of all, Barack Obama is responsible for this. He has created a climate of fear in the white community. And I believe that some white men are now turning to ISIS. I believe this guy could be inspired by ISIS. And when you put somebody in the corner, they'll go to the most radical group. ISIS is recruiting in America. They're going to recruit more angry white men to commit these types of acts. And that's basically what I got to say. But Barack Obama is the real instigator. Him and Sharpton. And stirring the pot.
You know, listen to what you're saying, brother. Listen to what you're saying. That the president of the United States is responsible for some maniac going out there and slaughtering six black women, pretending to be a congregant and then slaughtering them. And you're blaming Barack Obama and Al Sharpton. Yeah. Come on, Fred.
Yeah, because he sat in Reverend Wright's church for 20 years. 20 years sat in that racist man's church.
Don't you see how you're transferring guilt?
I have nothing to do with it.
You're transferring guilt to someone who massacres nine innocent people praying in the church?
Geraldo, I ain't backing down.
Fred, you may not be backing down, but you're ass backwards, buddy.
No.
Bob in New Jersey, what's on your mind, Bob?
Yeah, how you doing, Geraldo? My condolences to all the families. I'm concerned when they catch the white guy, what are we going to do when he says he's a black guy?
I have to laugh with that grim laughter there.
You were mentioning Al Sharpton, and about 15 minutes from now, Al Sharpton is going to hold a press conference. He will announce that his organization is going to put up reward money in the search for Dylan.
Well, reward money is helpful, but what I'm looking for from Al Sharpton, who I know and consider a friend, I've known him for decades. What I'm looking for and I'm praying for from Al Sharpton is something along the lines of my position on this. This crime, this unforgivable obscenity, there's no reasoning to it. This person was out to be a malignant force, to take us down as one nation, to tear us apart. This kid knew what he was doing. I don't know if he had consorts, co-conspirators, or if, like some of these self-starting ISIS terrorists, he just decided to do the most damage he possibly could with an irrational act of violence. But we can't let him succeed. Al has to say, and Jesse has to say, and Mayor de Blasio has to say, that this racist animal, this person must be caught and punished and not allowed to further aggregate the racial divide that exists in this country. Al has to say that. Al has to say this isn't white against black. Al has to say this is good against evil. That's what Al has to say. That's what Jesse has to say. That's what the president of the United States and the mayor of the city of New York have to say. That this is an attack by evil on good. This is a nihilistic anarchist. This is a person who wants trouble.
And you talk about evil on good. Think about for the moment people you've known over the years that are in Bible study groups. You know what I mean?
It just is so painful.
You know, they follow
the nicest people.
And these people were in this Bible study group, six women, three men, in this famous church. I mean, it's the oldest African-American church in the South. This kid, he is a kid, 21 years old, walks in. my guess is, and we'll know, there is a survivor. Maybe we'll get the story out of the survivor. But my guess is they were excited to see a new member come in. Told him to sit
welcoming.
Down and join their group, welcoming him. And this guy had an evil plan clearly from the moment he walked in. I don't know how it ended, what started it, and when he pulled out the gun. But he sat there for an entire hour through this Bible study group of these nine people who probably meet every single Wednesday night.
And picture them. We've all seen the congregants in the traditional black churches or the traditional Puerto Rican churches. My cousin Lily is a pastor up in the Bronx. I see her congregants. I can picture them in my mind. The kindest, the most open-minded.
They do the most good in the community.
The most compassionate.
Yep.
The most defenseless. Here's Vince in New Jersey. What's up, Vince?
Hey, good morning. A couple of points. Number one, it really scares me with this focus on hatred, the hate crime. Hey, what is worse than murder? There is no crime on the earth worse than murder. You murder nine innocent people, that's the most heinous, vicious crime. But what the left is trying to do, you know, you heard Rahm Emanuel, is the one that said, you can't let a good crisis go to waste. And they're not worried about defining this any worse than what it is. You kill nine people, you deserve the death penalty. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. Murder is disgusting. But to call it a hate crime is so they can redefine the word hate as speech now. So now, when you say something that's classified as hatred, it doesn't matter who you say it against or what you say. In the future, you're going to
be
killed.
Hold it, Vince. Don't you think that it is significant that young white man targeted defenseless black people? Don't you think that is significant? Isn't it, when you think of James Holmes in Aurora, Colorado, taking on everybody in the movie theater and slaughtering them, you know, here's a psychopath who wanted a disgruntled antisocial person who wanted to make he wanted to go down in infamy. But this guy, I think, Dylann Roof wants more than infamy. He wants race war. He wanted to make he left a survivor and he said reportedly, I'm leaving you alive so you can tell people what I'm saying and what I've done.
Well, that is true, but we don't know anything yet. And, you know, of course it's horrible to do that. But you know what? Let's not forget the two cops that were slaughtered in New York in the name of Ferguson. And this one's for Ferguson. Didn't he say that? And how do we know that didn't happen in Baltimore, things where people were pulled out of their homes, the businesses were destroyed? You know, there is a climate right now. And you know, I know you didn't like the last caller, but let me rephrase this. Not only Obama, but the left is actively engaged in stirring the pot. They're stirring the pot, and that's why I don't like to focus on the word hatred, because there's hatred and there's racism coming from both sides. And we see that constantly. And when you try to redefine murder as not as bad as hatred, it's going to be used in free speech. It's going to be used.
I got you, Vince. I got to go, and I understand. And you are a reasonable person. I got no beef with you, and I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. 4 minutes before 11 o'clock, there's been a shooting on Staten Island. Three NYPD officers, the Daily News reporting, three NYPD officers involved in a shootout with a gunman who opened fire on the cops in Staten Island. This is the second police-involved shooting in a week here in New York. We don't know. It was two groups in the 120 precinct there in Staten Island. The anti-crime unit spotted two groups fighting outside an apartment building on Park Hill Avenue in part of the Park Hill section of Staten Island. We don't know. We know that three officers fired back at the alleged perp who fired at them. Nobody hit, as far as we know. They're searching now for the alleged perpetrator who shot at the cops. This coming after, the 25-year-old Arthur Whatley pulled a knife on the cops in Brooklyn, and he was shot. As far as we know, nobody's killed here, but there's a lot of tension out there, ladies and gentlemen. We need this Charleston, South Carolina incident like a hole in the head. This is very, very bad. We would expect the President of the United States to say something about this one, and soon. We'll be right back after this. Our special coverage continues. The news is breaking, about this terrible massacre in Charleston, South Carolina. Right now, we are delighted to welcome to the program the Reverend Larry McCutcheon. He is a very prominent pastor who knows exactly what's going on in Charleston. He's a man with deep roots there. And I just, first of all, my sincere Reverend welcome.
Thank
Reverend
you
McCutcheon,
very much.
Welcome. My sincere God condolences. This is a terrible, terrible thing. Can you tell us how you're reacting right now?
Well, I'm still in shock. It's a hot but a very dreary day. I think people are moving around as if, well, we're in shock.
Shock is something that is absolutely understandable. The community I'm watching seems to be rallying together. The motive of this killer apparently racial, to split people up. Do you think he'll succeed, Reverend?
No, but this killer have deep hatred not only for the races of people and possibly gender, but he has deep hatred for persons of all races in general, as well as himself. As far as splitting people up, he will do more to bring people together. I will say that as I think about this killer, he's sort of our dividend for all of the hatred that's come out in various areas of this country for the last 10 or 20 years. And so he's something that this system has created. And, you know, to even think that he's human and yet he's not human, in my estimation.
Reverend Larry McCutcheon, who has preached, a pastor indeed at the AME Church. I wonder if you
I'm a United Methodist pastor.
A United Methodist. So tell me about the significance of this particular location there in Charleston.
It is located in our historic district there in Charleston. A host of people have just walked in that beautiful structure just to look at it. It's a magnificent structure. It's a symbol of the civil rights movement and other human rights activity. Dr. King preached there. And almost, there's just been a host of people throughout that particular church. It's located in one of the prettiest areas of Charleston, and it's a very diverse area and a wonderful place to be.
And what now, will it forever bear this scar?
It will forever bear the pain of what happened. Remember, historically, and I have to be very careful with this, this was Denmark Vesey's church. And remember that he and about 30-some other persons were murdered in that particular church, that site, I should say. So it will forever have the hurt of it. But knowing the people of that church, that church is going to bounce back. And Charleston is a resilient city, and the city is going to bounce back, and they're going to help that church bounce back.
So you were referring to the slave revolt that was so brutally exterminated back before the Civil War?
Correct.
Right there, 30-some black men who rebelled, were slaves who rebelled, were murdered there?
Correct.
On that very scene?
On that very site.
And so, lo, these many years later, 150 years or more later, we have this. I mean,
We have this, a young man going into prayer service, sitting with people, and no doubt interacting with people, and yet was able to kill 9 people.
And when you look into his soul as a pastor who has given advice and comfort to people, describe that hatred that motivates that young man to do this despicable act.
Well, it's hard to describe it, and I won't say that he's a bad seed, but I think he's just a combination of so many things going on in our society. He's a product of an environment of hate. Unfortunately, because of the 24-hour communication system we have, the internet, and everything that we have going on, persons don't take the time to reflect. And no doubt he's heard so much until he believed that he must hate certain people. And it's hard to get at it. It's just that he has, a deep, deep, dark soul. And I hope and pray that he's caught alive and someone can talk to him and just hear what went on in his life and his heart that he was able and capable to execute something like that.
Tell me about the Reverend Clementa Pinckney.
I've met the young man several times, a bright, shining star as far as the church is concerned in the political arena. He was elected in his 30s to go into the state Senate. Great compassion for people, a hard worker. He loved the community. And all that I've heard of the young man, even from the interview from his former pastor, he was just a loving person.
A loving person shut down and killed. Reverend, I have to leave you. We have a lot of developments, but I really appreciate it. I'm heading to Charleston, South Carolina. I hope to speak to you from there.
Thank you.
Thank you. Reverend Larry McCutcheon. We're hearing now, according to the uncle of the alleged perpetrator, Dylan Storm Roof. Dylan Roof was given the gun by his father as a 21st birthday present in April. He just turned 21 in April. Father gives him a gun. Cops are at his home right now speaking to his mother. The uncle recognized the nephew from the photo, describes the nephew as quiet and soft-spoken. The father gave him a .45 caliber pistol for his birthday in April. Oh, man. The country needs this, I'm telling you. Like, this is terrible. This is just terrible, I have to say. This will... And, you know, what is interesting, they have a lot of national correspondents in Charleston. Apparently, you know, South Carolina's got that very important, it's the third contest, second primary in the presidential selection process. So you had a lot of the candidates and a lot of the national press already in Charleston.
Yeah, Hillary was there last night at a fundraiser. Jeb Bush was set to have something going on today, so he's canceled that.
Lindsey Graham is heading, the senator from South Carolina, was in New Hampshire, or was to be in New Hampshire. He also is heading home. So this, I think, will dominate, and rightfully so, the news cycle as we lead into the Father's Day weekend. It's already affecting my travel plans. I'll be taking a detour. We're supposed to be going to Cleveland to be with Erica's folks. Erica and Sol will go on. I'll go to Charleston, South Carolina, and see what develops. You know, both the manhunt for this young savage who did this horrible crime, killing 9 innocent people. And it's almost, you know, it seems to me, you know, I think that, like the Charlie Hebdo massacre in Paris, so the gunmen arrive on the scene, they just start shooting. You can see they build up their rage, they build up their courage, they're psyched on the, you know, they're all ready to burst, and they go and they kill. But to go into a church and to pretend, if these reports are true, pretend to be a congregant or an aspirant, and you sit with people who are undoubtedly middle-aged or older, 9 absolutely harmless, welcoming people, and then you whip out this .45 and start plugging away. I mean, do you feel a sense of, you know, is it a... You know, what pleasure do you get from this? Is it pure rage? Is it, I'll get you, you so-and-so? I mean, it's just so, you know, I say what you want about guns. I've been around guns for a long, long time. The problem with guns, and you give guns to someone that this 20, just turns 21 years old, and he's already, obviously, this unbalance in his life didn't start yesterday evening. This is someone who is simmering and deeply troubled and filled with deep-seated hate. Could his father not see any of it? You know, they describe him as quiet and soft-spoken, but is this a complete surprise to everybody? You give him a gun? Here's your gun. Did they give him training? Did someone speak to him about it? But you go and you use it on nine people that you knew, that for an hour you spoke with, that you sat side by side with, that you looked in the eyes of. You had to get some sense of these folks.
You know, we're getting more information on this Reverend Pinckney, who was the pastor at this church in Charleston. And he was one of the leaders who, in the aftermath of the Walter Scott. In the aftermath of the Walter Scott murder, he would travel to North Charleston. They're separate cities, Charleston and North Charleston. He would travel to North Charleston to try and convince people in that community to stay calm, that this was a act of one officer and not an entire police force. And they say he was an integral part of keeping the lid on what could have been a really awful scene in North Charleston.
North Charleston had no negative reaction. I mean, obviously they were pained and outraged, but nobody acted out. Nobody burned anything.
He was there. He was there alongside Reverend Al Sharpton and some other people trying to keep the calm, and they did so successfully. And now he takes a bullet last night inside this church.
That's just terrible. It is 17 minutes after 11 o'clock. We'll be right back.
This is a WABC News Bulletin.
We are getting word that the perpetrator of the church massacre, the suspect, has been caught. That Dylan Roof, age 21, has been caught attempting to make it from South Carolina over the border to North Carolina. I'm not sure. Noam, is it? Was he caught in?
He was. It was
North Carolina,
just over the border in Shelby, North Carolina. They captured him. This is being reported by The State, which is one of the best newspapers in South Carolina, and so I trust their sources. Their sources saying that he's been captured in Shelby, North Carolina.
So he has been captured. Any details as far as The State newspaper is reporting on the takedown?
That is it. That's all they're telling. All they're reporting right now is that he's in custody.
That he is in custody. The perpetrator is in custody. Dylan Storm Roof in custody. We are hearing now from multiple sources. The State, the big newspaper, the big statewide newspaper in South Carolina is reporting it, as is CNN and others now joining. So he made this horrific crime, then a clumsy attempted escape in the vehicle. You know, it was interesting to me how the authorities were putting out the information almost as soon as they got it. We had the tag number and the description. We had the surveillance video and the mugshot of the man who was shortly named. So because of his drug rap, and I don't know what else his criminal history is, we had sufficient information that they could take him down. Any word there?
Well, I can tell you about this. He was charged with this first offense, drug possession, in Lexington, where he's from, and that was only in March. And then you say his father
gave
him
the gun
in April or May.
April, I think.
In April, which is awfully interesting. So, by the way,
What is that? What is that? I mean, do you give him a present for getting your first drug offense? You turn 21. You're 20 when you get the drug offense. You get the gun when you're 21 a month later. Is that possible?
You know, I don't know if this means anything, but I'm looking more at his Facebook page, which is the pictures that are being circulated are one in front of some sort of swampy area in South Carolina. And among his friends, there's a fair amount of African-American friends. I mean, South Carolina has a large African-American population, so you would think it would be hard for him not to be interacting with African-Americans on a daily basis. But clearly these are people either he went to school with, but they're friends of his 89 friends on his Facebook page. A fair amount of them are African-American.
Is that so?
Yeah.
That's so weird. I don't get that.
Now, they may not be truly friends. You know, sometimes on Facebook, you just sort of hook up with people you've met once and you want to stay in contact with. But
Sylvia Johnson, a cousin of the reverend that you mentioned, Reverend Pinckney, told NBC News, according to the New York Times, that she had spoken with the survivor of the shooting, who told her that the gunman reloaded five times. The survivor, according to this woman, Sylvia Johnson, the cousin of the Reverend, the survivor told her that the gunman entered the church, asked for the pastor, sat down next to Pastor Pinckney during the Bible study before opening fire. The gunman quoted the saying, "I have to do it. You rape our women and you're taking over our country and you have to go." I mean, where do you get that from? Where do you get that from?
Well, I think we're going to find out that he was a very sick individual.
But, you know, that's almost like giving him too much slack.
It is.
Of course you're sick
but
if you kill nine
who
people.
Who shoots nine people? Of somebody who's really ill, yeah.
But that's not enough. Everybody who murders, unless it's like in the passion of the moment, right. The wife kills her husband, you know, that's most murders, is that crime of passion, totally understandable, however unforgivable or forgivable, depending on the circumstances, up to you. But in this case, you sit next to them, contemplating your act of murder
for an hour
as people are praying in a Bible service. I don't know. It just
that's the only I'm looking at the crime history they just put out. That's the only crime was this drug misdemeanor back in March. Otherwise, I don't see anything else in his. That's the only.
And is there any indication on his Facebook page that he was, you know, a member of any of these, like, stormtrooper groups or any of them?
You know, usually they attach something, interest groups and that kind of thing. I don't see anything like that.
Nothing like that.
Yeah.
All right, we'll continue, ladies and gentlemen. I'll come to your calls. Actually, we're going to get a very special call from Kabul, Afghanistan. I'm going to change the subject for a couple of minutes when we come back. The commanding general, my dear friend, General John Campbell, will be calling us from Kabul, Afghanistan. You know, if we lost 9 GIs in Kabul, Afghanistan, imagine how people would be reacting today in a single act like that.
77 WABC.
At 37 minutes after 11 o'clock, on this grim day when we are following the developments in this mass murder in Charleston, South Carolina, we can never forget that we are fighting two wars overseas where our men and women are in harm's way, doing the best they can to keep us safe. And I am honored beyond words to introduce to you now a very special guest, a friend of mine. He is the commander of Resolute Support. That's all our forces in Afghanistan. He is, I call him America's Spartan, our top warrior, our top war fighter. I've known him since the very beginning. Very pleased to bring on to the phone right now, live from Kabul, Afghanistan, General John F. Campbell. General, how are you doing?
Well, good to be with you, and thoughts and prayers all the way from Afghanistan back to the folks in Charleston there.
You know, they caught him in North Carolina. You spent time in Bragg and in Fort Campbell. It's a terrible, terrible wound in the side of America there, General.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, just heard about it away over here. And again, thoughts and prayers for that tragic incident there in Charleston. And, you know, every single day continue to have our soldiers here, our airmen, Navy, Marines, all in harm's way, continue to be in harm's way to continue to protect our country. And then you have that happen there in the United States. So, tragedy.
General John F. Campbell, my guest, my friend, the commander of Resolute Support. Just generally speaking, how hard is it to fight, to risk so much in a largely forgotten war, General?
Well, Rob, as you know, we've been here 14 years now, and the men and women here absolutely understand what they continue to do, not only for our nation back home, but for the men and women here in Afghanistan continues to be very important. So maybe forgotten, as you said, maybe in the media back in the United States, but it's certainly not forgotten for the men and women here and their families back home and for the Afghans, because they certainly do appreciate the international support and what the United States has done for them to provide them hope here in Afghanistan, again, over the last 14 years. So they're not fighting for media. They're fighting to make sure they continue to do everything they can to help the Afghans out here. So it doesn't bother us at all.
Now you're a four-star general, one of the highest-ranking members of the armed forces. You command all those troops you commanded in Iraq. You've been fighting for such a long time. I met you when you were a colonel. You know, how do you personally do it, General Campbell?
Well, Rod, I think, you know, again, what gives me energy every single day is to see the great men and women that continue to volunteer for all of our services in the United States to do something that's bigger than themselves here. So for me, it's easy, and I'm just honored to have the opportunity to command. That is a privilege to do that. We continue to get great men and women that want to do something like this to protect their country, to serve their country, something bigger than themselves. So for me, it's easy. And when we have the support of our nation, we have the support of our families, that just gives us energy to continue to push forward here. And again, the Afghans deserve this. They are very caring people. They're working very hard to have a stable Afghanistan. They want the same things we all want for our families: jobs, roof over their heads, education for their kids. So it's not hard.
My guest, General John F. Campbell, commander of Resolute Support, all our forces in Afghanistan, recently featured just a couple of weeks ago by Lara Logan on 60 Minutes. I think that he has a brilliant future in uniform or in the political scene. I don't want to press him on that, but I want to come back. I'm going to circle back to that. I want to ask you, before I lose you, General Campbell, some very specific questions. Is ISIS really now in Afghanistan? You had your hands full with the Taliban and the Haqqani gangsters. Now do you have ISIS also to contend with?
Yeah, rather ISIS, or as they refer to here as Daesh in Afghanistan, or Islamic State of Khorasan, ISK, are really what they're called. They continue to recruit here in Afghanistan. We've seen the recruiting. There are reports of Daesh fighting Taliban in Nangarhar province today. They continue to try to recruit to build a base. There's a little bit of money flowing back and forth, but we have not seen them operationalize like they have in Syria and Iraq. We continue to watch that very closely. President Ghani, Chief Executive Diller are concerned about that. The Afghan security forces are concerned. This is not the conditions for Daesh is not like it is in Iraq and Syria. Just very, very different, I think, and really considered here a global threat. And so President Ghani talks about the region, talks about potentially what could happen if Daesh takes a foothold here in Afghanistan. They're going to continue to do everything they can, and we'll help to make sure that doesn't happen. It's here, and there's potential for it to spread. But right now, today, it continues, I think, to be an emerging threat here in Afghanistan.
General John F. Campbell from Kabul, Afghanistan, is my guest. He is live from the front lines there. Why is it that the Afghans fight to defend their country and the Iraqis chicken out?
I can't speak for the Iraq piece. And as you know, I was 19 months here in Iraq, and while I was there, very, very tough army, but the political piece of that turned that way wrong over the last couple of years. Third time here in Afghanistan, and my thoughts here is that they've been warriors, they've been fighting for 40-plus years. They are very, very patriotic here in Afghanistan. They seek to have a stable Afghanistan. Their army here is their most embraced institution. People thought that they would fracture along ethnic lines when they had some political issues last year during the election, but the army did not. I think the Afghan army, as they've been around, the U.S. forces, the other coalition, they continue to get better. They know that the enemies of Afghanistan will not rest, so they can't rest, and they continue to get better and better across the board. I'm amazed at how they've come far along, but they do have challenges and issues that we continue to work with them on, special operating forces and their aviation and sustainment and intelligence, all the areas that are hard for an army. Like the U.S. Army, that quite frankly, last Saturday was its 240th birthday. The Afghan Army's only been around for about 8 or 9 years. But they continue to improve.
We can have boots on the ground. And again, in Iraq, I stood with you in Sadr City, Mosul, Ramadi, Fallujah. You are all over Iraq. You had the bad guys beaten. Are we going to have boots on the ground again in Iraq, General Campbell?
Well, we have several men and women in Iraq doing some great things to help the Iraqis right now. I think that's really a political decision as they move forward on whether or not the U.S. will put boots on the ground. I can just tell you from my experience here in Afghanistan, the Afghan forces continue to get better because they have been for, again, 14 years with our men and women. We now have a trained advice and assist mission here in Afghanistan. They have taken a lead for security on their own. Iraq tried that. It went way wrong here the last couple of years. Again, I think politically, the conditions, the prime minister there didn't do what he needed to do to embrace all the different political groups here. That's not happening right now in Afghanistan. You have a new national unity government. You have President Ghani, who has embraced the Afghan security forces. He is a commander-in-chief. He visits training. He visits hospitals. You know, so he's embraced the security forces, and that does a great deal for the morale here. But, you know, again, putting boots on the ground is a political decision. I know that the military leadership will provide their best military advice to the civilian leadership, and we'll work it from there.
General John F. Campbell, one of the busiest men in the country, our best warrior, our war fighter, but he's also been spending, it seems to me, General, almost as much time with Afghan leaders as fighters. You know, you could easily segue into being our ambassador in Afghanistan. Would you ever accept a job like that?
Well, don't even talk politics with me, Geraldo, but we have a great ambassador here, Mike McKinley, and we have a great relationship. I'm honored to serve alongside him and the great members of the U.S. Embassy here. I have plenty of work to do. I have no thoughts of being an ambassador. I just want to continue.
How about a senator?
No, I have no thoughts of doing that either. So I'm happy with being in the Army. I hit 36 years about a week and a half ago. And I continue to enjoy what I'm doing, and I'm honored and privileged to have the opportunity to serve.
Love to your lovely wife, Ann, and to all your family. Is your son still overseas?
He's back at Fort Campbell. He just re-enlisted to go to Fort Hood, Texas, so very, very proud of him. And
what's his rank now?
He was a sergeant with the 101st. He was over here when I got over here for his second tour in Afghanistan. He continues to enjoy the Army as well, and you know, he's doing his own thing, and I'm proud of him.
I'm proud of you. I'm proud to know you, and thank you for your service to your country, and I say that with all my heart. You know how I feel about you. You know, you're America's Spartan, and everything you've done for us, I appreciate with great love and affection.
Thanks, Rob. The best of you and Eric and the family, and thanks to everybody out there, and thanks for your continued support of our great men and women here in Afghanistan.
General John F. Campbell, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back 48 minutes after. It's the first day of Ramadan. Ramadan, one of the most important religious observances in the Muslim world. So I want to give a shout out to all my Muslim friends. Ramadan Kareem. Have a blessed Ramadan. Have a peaceful Ramadan. Ladies and gentlemen, say that with all my love, I know you're going to have a week of fasting ahead of you to commemorate the revelation of the Quran to Muhammad. I hope that it all goes just as you wanted to, blessed and peaceful again. A great, noble Ramadan, Ramadan Kareem. We're going to be following this awful incident in South Carolina. In fact, Noam, I'm going to be leaving you right now and heading to the airport en route to Charleston, your old stomping ground. So I'll be in touch, and you will keep me tied into all your news contacts down there.
I will do that.
And give me the very latest. Sometimes it's easier in kind of a central receiving area like this to get the info than a reporter seeing just one street and the scene. But rough story.
Yeah. We're getting another name of one of the victims, a 19-year-old who just graduated college last year.
What's the point? What's the point? How can you... how can you just do something like that and pretend it's for some higher cause? Really? So it's happy birthday, Paul McCartney. An appropriate song to play. Stay tuned to 77 WABC. We'll let Sir Paul sing us out today.